Hello and welcome to Sean White's Solar and Energy Storage Podcast. On this podcast, it's a really big treat that we have Tor Solar Fred Valenza here. I don't know how long, because he's just always been there, part of the solar industry. A lot of people call him Fred when his real birth name is Tor. And so as I got to know him better, I switched from Fred to Tor. You might have seen him at a solar conference. He's just about every single solar conference, or at least all the big ones. He's a guy that wears a hat, and he's really good at branding himself. In fact, if I didn't see him with his hat, I might think that he's somebody else. It's just part of that branding. Oh, there he is. I saw him. Hey, Tor, welcome to the show. Let's have some fun.
Thanks, Sean, for having me on. And yes, you are absolutely right. The Fred name is definitely was a branding decision. If you want to, I can give you a brief little branding history about that.
And yeah, we'll get some branding lessons here. That'll be awesome.
When I first started in the industry, which was 2009, really 2008.
I think I'm going to brand myself as Tor. What do you think about that?
There is another Tor.
Tor Allen, is that?
Tor Allen, yes. Yeah.
Solar schoolhouse guy.
My arch nemesis, Tor Allen. He's a great guy and does a lot for Solar Schoolhouse.
Tor's rule.
Yeah. But when I was starting, I knew that social media was going to be important. And this was the dawn of Twitter. And I just thought that Solar Tor on Twitter, which is what I wanted to be, Solar something, just people wouldn't get it. They wouldn't make it sense. Because like when I go into a coffee shop these days, I order a drink, I automatically just say Tom. Because if I say Tor, there's always going to be, what did you say? Thor? And there's going to be all these other questions.
Thunder God, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's true. And Tor is just another spelling of that. It's just America doesn't usually hear it.
And so is Tor really the name of the Thunder God?
Yep. Just like John is spelled different ways in the U.S.
Can you
Sweden,
do like
Norway.
An audio imitation of thunder for me right now?
yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
I'm shooting thunder and lightning out of my ass as we speak.
Wow. I can see it. I can feel it.
So I knew that Solar Tor wouldn't make sense to people and make questions. Plus, I didn't want to confuse with Tor Allen.
I guess, too, because when the sun is out, that's not when you have thunder.
Yeah.
Not usually.
Yeah. Also wouldn't make sense for that. But yeah, Fred came out of just like I wanted to, again, branding decision. I wanted to reflect the average guys that might be on a roof at that time. I was definitely more in the residential marketing PR space of things. And I just thought Solar Fred sounds good. And Fred was a joke between me and my ex-wife when we had a neighbor across the street. And he just wouldn't tell us his name. And we just pass him by and he'd have his garbage cans out and things like that. And so we just gave him a name. We said, let's just call him Fred. And then we started, anytime we forgot a name or we forgot an item or something, we just passed me the Fred and things like that. So it just stuck. And then when I joined the solar industry, I decided, okay, I'll be known as Solar Fred for my moniker, but that's just for Twitter. But it stuck and people call me Fred and people call me Tor and I'll answer to both. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I was walking down the show floor recently in San Diego at the Intersolar conference. And I did hear somebody go, hey, Fred. And they were talking to you. And I was like, yeah, that was probably me one day.
Yeah. I think when people get to know me like you have over the years, Tor's just easier for them, but I still get Fred. There are certain people that still just call me and I just go by both. The other branding decision I made, which you noted, is also the hat. Once again, I wanted to reflect the people that I was trying to serve. And so
the solar installers. Blocking the sun rays.
Yeah.
A little solar blocker.
Yeah. And if I were really trying to be authentic, I probably should be wearing a hard hat, but probably, yeah. I don't know, does OSHA require hard hats?
It's debatable, but no, there's a lot of solar installers doing it without a hard hat up there.
Yeah. Hopefully with having harnesses. That's what we want, right?
Yeah, you should be wearing a harness or at least be a suspenders guy. You know, and then if you do that, you got to get a bow tie. And then you're marketing to a whole bunch of different people. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that's how I got started and went on to blog under the Solar Fred name. And that led me to Renewable Energy World. And I started blogging on there about solar PR and social media and marketing. And that's how I built my company, Unthink Solar, and been doing that for 13 years.
So another thing that I'd like to even do is go back further on your timeline.
Oh, no.
Before they invented solar. So back in the day. And you mentioned that on your probably True Solar Stories podcast.
Yes. Yes.
That you had a previous life and you were like a writer and you were living in Hollywood. And then I was just Googling you on the internet a little bit too. And it looks like your father, your sister, you have like different relatives that were in the film industry. And you have one of those, what did they call it? IMDb.
Yeah.
You're there. And so it's cool to see you there. And then another thing that's just interesting is that I was looking at you on Wikipedia and your birthday is exactly 1 week after my birthday. I'm March 29th, 1967. Uh-oh, I hope I didn't give away how old we are because we look so young.
Yes.
But anyways, so that's pretty cool. I'm exactly 1 week older than you. And you're in Oakland right now, I believe, or at least yes. You live in Oakland.
Yes.
And I was born on MacArthur Broadway at that intersection.
Wow. And that's cool.
Yeah. And another thing that was cool is they're just interesting too, is our vice president, Kamala Harris. She was born in the same hospital as me because I looked up her birth certificate because I don't remember why. I was just like surfing around or something. And it had a copy of her birth certificate. Maybe somebody was like trying to say she wasn't born here or something.
Yeah.
It looked just like my birth certificate. And I thought that was cool. But yeah, we could celebrate our birthdays together. And by the way, speaking of birthdays, Tor's an ex and I'm still on the board of NorCal Solar. And it's the 50th birthday of NorCal Solar, 1974. And we're going to have a party, I think in Oakland, I think in April, but I'm going to be sending out some newsletters as soon as I get it confirmed when that's going to happen.
Update, the NorCal Solar Party is April 26th from 5 to 9 p.m. in Oakland, California. To RSVP, go to norcalsolar.org.
But anyway, back to your other very interesting career, like you were a writer for Stargate. That's really cool. I've seen some of your work.
Yeah. Let me go back even farther than that. And that is that when I was just a teenager, I got fascinated with solar energy. I saw this little art show in Central Park. I grew up in New York. And there was this Japanese solar toy, which I still can't find a working one, but I want to one day. That was a bicycle, this little stick figure bicyclist that was pedaling with a solar chip next to it. And the guy, as I was walking by with my bicycle, just checking out the art show, he kept covering his hand and the bicyclist would stop and then he'd cover the chip and then he'd take his hand off and the cyclist would keep going. And I'd go and like, where's the battery? That's a cool on-off switch. And he said, well, it's the sun. Hmm. And he told me about the solar cell and that it was solar energy and all this other thing. And I was just so amazed. It was like magic to me that solar, instead of a battery, could be running this pedaling bicycle. And
it
so,
is magic.
Yeah, it is magic.
Still magic. Yeah.
Yeah. Now it runs cities. That got me into becoming a solar engineer. And I studied physics and calculus in high school. And then I realized I was not going to become a solar engineer. But I stayed fascinated by solar. And then I went to a liberal arts college called Middlebury, and I got the film and TV bug and went to Hollywood right after college and a road movie that got me a lot of attention through whatever. And I started writing for the major studios. None of my films got made, but that's what they call development hell. But eventually my agent got me on to Stargate and Stargate SG-1, the original, and Dharma and Greg is another one. And The Dead Zone, I just got a small credit there, but they kicked me off pretty quickly. It just wasn't right for me. And just a lot of other things that sadly, I don't know if it's sad, I made a living at it, but a lot of things just don't get made in Hollywood.
You didn't sell your soul or whatever to Harvey Weinstein, you mean? Something like that?
I did not sleep with Harvey Weinstein, one of the very few.
Yeah, you might regret that.
Yeah, I'd probably be
fine. Get a lot more credits.
Yeah. Then there was a big Writers Guild strike, and I wasn't on any TV shows, and I was depressed and just living off my residuals, and I thought, no, this isn't going to last. And I walked into a double feature of Who Killed the Electric Car and An Inconvenient Truth. And that re-inspired my old solar fascination. And I thought, okay, they don't need another solar engineer, and I'm not going to be that engineer. What they do need is better communication. So it was the dawn of media, and I was looking up, and none of the solar companies at that time in 2007, 2008 were using any kind of social media for their marketing. So yeah, I just started educating myself. I went to Living Institute, took an online course there. And
I love Solar Living Institute. No. Unfortunately, they closed down.
Yeah. Actually, I did in-person ones because that was in my neighborhood, the Solar Living Institute. But I also
up in Hopland? You went?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What, Doug Livingston, right?
No, I did one with Andy Black.
Andy Black. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. He was teaching them. And I also did online with Solar Energy International, which does still exist right now. And yeah, just started learning how to speak the talk and start reading the trades and started my PR company on Think Solar and started blogging about all the terrible ways that we weren't marketing in the solar industry. And that's how I got my clients. People said, oh, he's a good critic. How can you help? And I told them how I could help.
Yeah, now it's gone full circle because you're taking your former experience writing stories, and now you have your probably true solar stories podcast.
Yes.
Which is pretty cool. I've been listening to that for a while now, but I'm just listening a little bit more too. And it's, you bring up some pretty interesting topics. You have like people with guns and murders and bodies in freezers and talk about forced labor and a solar installer that's the president. And they usually have to be an attorney or something. It's pretty great.
Yeah. So that's upcoming, but I think the genesis for Probably True Solar Stories was one of my mission statement for my PR company is be bold for solar, stand out and educate. And one of the things that I was seeing, and again, probably because I have this lens of being a former Hollywood person, was that I never saw solar in film and television, or rarely. So pop quiz for you. When's the last time you saw solar in a TV show or film TV? And I'll qualify this. No science fiction. Solar is today. Solar is now. So when's the last time you saw something that wasn't a documentary, that wasn't on a news program, that was just solar in everyday life? And by the way, Sean, last I checked, there's 4.5 million solar installations in the U.S. today. It's not like they're invisible, but they are invisible in Hollywood. All right, now I'll let you tell me the last time you saw solar in film and TV.
Yeah, that's a tricky question for me because I don't watch much film and TV. Ah. Sometimes I will go on a Netflix binge, but usually the kind of things that I watch, they haven't even got to cars yet. They're riding horses. And we do have solar back then, and we have solar energy. And that's the way that Genghis Khan took over the world. It was solar energy turned into grain, and he figured out how to go really fast with his horses and take over and do all kinds of terrible things to people. But as far as like a regular TV show, I can't even think of a regular TV show that I've watched. I work a lot too. I really haven't watched. So I can't tell you any TV show ever.
It's a short list that I've found. And I actually wrote an article in Solar Today in the last issue.
Oh, great.
So for anybody who's an ACES member, you can see the short list. And the bottom line, it's things like a James Bond movie, The Man with the Golden Gun. I don't know if people remember that, but they had a kind of a sci-fi kind of CSP laser solar technology that was not only going to solve the oil crisis at that time in the early 70s, but also it create a powerful laser weapon that could shoot things down.
I think I remember that. Is that like Austin Powers or something did a spoof off of that? Is that?
I don't know if Austin Powers did a spoof off of it.
It's like he's got a laser and he's going to, or something. I don't know.
Yeah. In any case, suffice to say that solar has, if it has been portrayed, it's mostly been portrayed inaccurately in real life. And sci-fi wise, I think one of the best ones that felt almost real was The Martian. And Matt Damon, used the power of the station with solar panels. And then he strapped those panels onto his rover in order to get to the landing site to take off again and all that stuff. That's great. But like I said, there's 4.5 million on the ground here some way, somehow. There are even a lot of calculators and things like that. Solar power is all around us. And so I just felt like if solar is going to be mainstream, we've got to get it more visible in film and TV somehow. And that means, again, for workforce development, we need, according to some figures, another 700,000 solar workers if we're going to meet our climate goals by 2030. So people have got to see that the same way that they're seeing lawyers on TV and they're seeing dragon slayers on TV, and people want to be joking about that. But when people wanting to go solar and utilities and policymakers seeing that, it really is a mainstream technology. And pet peeve of mine is when I hear people say they love solar as alternative energy. And I want to say, no, it is the fastest growing energy source that we have in terms of new capacity and new generation. So it is no longer the alternative. It is the first choice for many utilities around the world right now. So in order to dramatize this growth and to show it in our real lives and entertain people, there's a made-up term called edutainment. And that's what this is. I'd love to hear, because I know you've been listening to them more recently just to prep for this interview. Did I make any inaccurate things except for maybe the dragon story, which is complete fantasy anyway? But
dragons are real.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's, but yeah, there's, like, how the dragons are kind of an analogy for fossil fuels in your stories.
Yeah. There's a 3-part dragon story that people can catch up to on that. But the genesis for that was, again, I was frustrated that people loved Game of Thrones and dragons aren't even real. And yet we don't have any solar things, which are real and solar themed shows. And so I said, okay, I will write a solar dragon story. Mm-hmm. And it's a fun thing that is basically, what if dragons in the beginning of a kingdom, but modern kingdom type world, were the power sources for thermal power plants. So instead of coal and instead of gas, you had dragons that were providing the heat for the turbines. And and that was fun, except that dragons were union members and they could be temperamental and there's all these other issues. And so an evil king decides to kill them all and replace them with fossil fuels instead of solar. So then there's what they call an energy wizard, who's really just an engineer who invents some solar technology to protect the dragons and defeat the evil king.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a fun one. There's a lot of modern references and humor to the media and things like that, but it's also a little bloody because dragons can do some damage.
So let's tell anybody that's listening, and I'm sure lots of Hollywood producers are listening right now, they need to put more solar and even more realistic solar, like solar PV, into their movies, into their TV shows. And that's a great way to promote solar and get people used to it. And they just need to do it. Get it going. No excuses.
Yeah. And I think just like James Bond really isn't about the cool weapons and gadgets from Q, it's about a guy who is trying to solve some problems in the world. And I think in the same way, that's what we're doing with probably True Solar Stories, is just showing real people with real problems. It just happens to be in the solar industry. And I take that back. It's not real problems. It's the same problems that you see other people and characters on Netflix and in the movies having. So they're always extraordinary problems, but I wanted to make it entertainment. It's things like Murder by Solar Drone. Did you hear that one?
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, so that one's kind of like a Rear Window type of thing where a solar installer is doing a drone survey of a house and he hears a gunshot. And so he looks back on his tape and he sees some cattle moving and he thinks that was a real shot. It happened to come from the ranch house of his ex-fiance, who he had a fight with before. And now his best friend, who slept with his ex-fiance, is now missing. And so there's this, like, is that person dead or is it just he's away on a trip, like his ex-fiance said, and there's a sheriff involved and all this other stuff. So again, this fun murder mystery, and it seems like the drone's site survey gives evidence that a shot really did happen and something happened to his former best friend.
Announcement. We just had to edit out because I spoiled it, but due to editing, we just fixed that. And so we cut out the ending.
A reveal. Yes.
The reveal. Yeah.
I try to take these out of the headlines and again, within the context of the solar industry. So another one is about in the news that there are people who are with rifles taking pot shots at transformers and trying to make them overheat and destabilize the grid. And so I thought, okay, let's do one about that. And these two kids are just making out at the top of a hill and they hear some gunshots again. And yeah, this terrorist is trying to take down the grid and they get involved with him and they're running from him and they defeat him with a bunch of things, including a smart home and a Tesla. And I won't tell you more than that, but that one's another fun one. And then I think, you know,
a smart home. I wonder how that could happen.
Well, if you get people into a smart home, there are certain things that you can do with your phone to turn devices on and off.
Like lock the door and turn up the thermostat to 250 or something like that.
Even more. Again, depending if you're thinking about it hard, which I did. But like the other one is I want to do pop culture. So there's also a kid-friendly one where Winnie the Pooh goes solar. And that one is because Winnie the Pooh is now in the public domain. So I could do that.
I thought even Santa Claus was probably copyrighted.
Santa Claus? I don't think so. I was kidding.
Yeah.
Think about him. Yeah. That was from the 1800s. Yeah. But yeah, so that's fun one. But I think one of my favorite ones is this long running series called The Solar Heist, or How I Got Into the Solar Business. And that is a Coen Brothers. It's going to be ultimately an 11-part episode. 8 have been published, or 9 have been published, 2 more to go, and they're coming up this week. And this is February 9th. So if anybody is interested, they can go back and listen to the other ones before the new one comes out. Actually, by the time this is published, they will be out.
Okay. Yes. Yep.
So anyway, but that one is directly drawn from the headlines, and it's about this solar installer who gets his solar, or I shouldn't say solar installer, solar developer, utility solar developer, who gets his modules confiscated by customs because of the forced labor laws. And he thought he was getting true non-forced labor modules, but customs said otherwise. And so his importer screwed him. And so he needs to get his modules back or else his whole project is going to go downhill. And so he finds a guy who knows a guy, and they heist his solar panels out of the customs warehouse. And that goes into a series of a lot of twists and turns because nobody is really who they seem to be. And I'll just leave it at that. So if I was talking to a Hollywood producer, it's The Sopranos meets Solar. Mm-hmm. Well, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things happen with that, but all with you're learning a lot. You're learning about solar development. You're learning about solar procurement. You're learning about solar policies and the ITC, all in this workforce development in this 11 episode story. And it's fun. It's the Coen Brothers, I think, is my writing style. So if you like the Coen Brothers and their comedic dark side, that's my favorite writing style.
Hey, I got a question for you because you have these multi-part series of your stories on your podcast. What's your recommendation for the best way to do them in order? Like, I guess you can go to the index or something like that. Is there any kind of easy way? So like when one finishes and you're like in the middle of something that it automatically goes to the next one?
I think the easiest way to do that, two things, go to probablytruesolar.com, which is the podcast website. And I am featuring all the Solar Heist episodes in a row at the top in the featured episode one. So you can play it through the website streaming thing. They're available on all the major things, but you'd have to go down to them. The other thing that I do in those episodes is in the show notes, I have links to the previous ones so that you can always listen to the ones before that. But I think in terms of trying to get it in a row, the easiest thing to do is to just go to the website, probablytruesolar.com, and go to the top of the homepage and you'll see a feature tab and just click down to the earliest one and go forward from there. The other thing that I did is that this is the third season that I'm in the middle of, but the first two compilations of the Solar Heist episode and the Dragon Story episode, I did wrap up into a single long episode. So you'll see there's a link for, or there's an episode for 1 through 6.
Oh, so awesome. That's what I needed to know.
In a row. Yeah. And when we finish the series, all 11 episodes, it'll be like an audiobook, and I'll publish that one at the end of season 3.
Okay, that'll be awesome. That's got to be the way to do it too. Yeah. And then just like, how important is it to do them in order? Is it like, do you not understand season 2 if you didn't listen to 1 or?
Yeah, I would say that it is very important. Again, it's a short series, relatively. So for the Solar Heist storyline, I would definitely listen to those in a row. So just go to, again, number 6, the 1 through 6 episode, and listen to that. And then you can go to 7 and 8 and 9 and 10 and 11.
So how long until I'm going to be able to watch these on Netflix?
Next year. No.
Next year. Okay.
I hope that's going to be the case one of these days. But there's no, as I know from experience, you can set things up with a studio and they'll never get made. I did that many times. I think I did that 8 times with my scripts, with TV pilots and things like that. And they just don't. For one reason or another, they got to find a star. They've got to find a director. They're expensive to make. There's a new studio head and he just doesn't seem to like that story. And you got to keep in mind that Hollywood makes or develops, I should say, each studio has 1,000 projects that it's developing and they couldn't make all of them. They got to make pick and choose. And if you're lucky enough to get a star attached, then that's the one that they're going to make because that's the one that's going to make the money.
Well, this is the one that's going to save the world, save the planet.
I think so. I think so.
So it's got to happen. And anybody out there listening that has any kind of connections or knows somebody that knows somebody, just please make sure this happens, please.
Yeah.
And then we can see a triple feature that's going to have probably true solar stories. It's going to have Who Killed the Electric Car and an Inconvenient Truth.
That would be fun.
Maybe Al Gore's listening too, and he can make it happen.
Yeah.
You got that, Al?
Al, come on. I think the other thing to know about the podcast is that there are all these one-off stories. So generally the stories are, it's an anthology series. You'll have, again, different stories that are just 20 to 25 minutes long for the most part. And that's going to continue. Like after I finish this series, well, this has been my baby, but I've had some one-offs before, but you'll see in the rest of the season, there's going to be a lot more happening. Like the one that you mentioned, where a president declares, who used to be a solar installer, declares a climate emergency and the political ramifications of that. And also the danger in terms to his life, ramifications of that.
The president that used to be a solar installer, is that President Carter? Because remember like Habitat for Humanity? In fact, I'm pretty sure I saw a picture of him on a job site doing something with Grid Alternatives, which also, speaking of birthdays, they're having their 20th anniversary this year. But it was probably like 15 years ago or something that Carter was like helping them out. So we already had a president as a solar installer. He even did put solar on the White House.
Yes, he was the first to do it. And Reagan took it off. And then I think Bush put some actually.
Yeah, he did. Like on the pool house.
The pool house. Yeah. Some solar thermal there. And then finally, Obama finally got him back on the White House again.
Yeah, it was installed by Russians. Just kidding.
Probably by Kenyans, if you're asked Donald Trump about that.
Yeah, and they have little cameras going down in there and stuff.
Yeah, so they're back up there. I don't think Trump managed to take them off or even cared that they were on there. Thank goodness.
Yeah, I remember when Sungevity had a big old marketing campaign to do that. And then it finally happened. Oh, that was you with the Sungevity marketing campaign?
I wrote a blog post about why don't we have solar on the White House again? And Danny Kennedy got in touch with me and he said, we feel the same way and we are starting the same thing. So let's do something together. So together we promoted the idea that they would put it on there on the White House for free. We'll have the installers. We've got the equipment, everything. Obama, just do it. And word came back that they couldn't for many reasons that they couldn't accept just anybody installing solar on the White House. It had to really come from people who were vetted and all these other things. It had to be American made, yada, yada, yada. So eventually they did contract with an installer in the DC area.
So it is public who did the installation?
I believe so. Yeah. It wasn't Standard Solar, or it was another, some type of design engineering company that does.
I figured it was just probably secret or something because I couldn't figure out who it was. So that's interesting.
It's in there somewhere. I remember it was reported somewhere, but that's the good news. It's back on the White House. The bad news is that they didn't make, like Carter did a whole news blitz about this, and it was in the middle of the oil embargo. But Obama just put in a little video clip. This week, we commissioned the solar on top of the White House again. And that was it. They didn't put out a press release. They didn't put out anything. I think because of all the pushback that they got from at that time, it was around 2011. So they were in the middle of Obamacare, healthcare debate, and just a lot of other things. So they just didn't want to engage the right even more. And so they just didn't make a meal out of it, but they should have.
Yeah, yeah.
Coming from a PR person. But kudos to the Sungevity team for really pushing that and trying. And they created what they call the Globama campaign and just kept encouraging him to do it. And he did.
There's still like an offshoot of that. Do you know about Solar Head of State?
Yes.
And so I guess there was this guy, James Ellsmore. Do you know who he is?
Yep.
And it was funny, like while they were still doing the campaign to get it on the White House, or towards the end of that, I can't remember, but I live in Orinda and he rode his bike to my house just to meet. And we hung out for a little while and then he took off and I see him posting things and he's out there working for putting solar on presidential palaces around the world. And he's been doing that for, I guess, over a decade.
Yeah. James has reached out to me several times and I don't know if we've directly met. I don't recall, James. We could have here or in a conference, but I don't think so. But in any case, he's doing amazing work. And yes, he keeps getting attention for trying to put solar on all of the heads of state's residences around the world. And I haven't checked in on his progress, but I hope it's...
Yeah, I'm on his website right now. So it looks like a lot of different islands and things like that. Where they can get, maybe it's because they're easier. It looks like he says, our work, Maldives, St. Lucia, Jamaica, or maybe that's just where he likes to hang out.
Yeah, I've got to do something about this. But I think one of the other things that many, I think, heads of state can maybe point to is that part of their grid or some other part of their grid is dedicated from community solar. And I've got to do a post about community solar, about how you can go solar virtually, not necessarily on your roof. I'm not a big believer in carbon credits. So anybody who says that they're offset their carbon footprint through RECs, renewable energy credits, that doesn't work for me. Community solar I buy, as long as that is actually in your community and you're actually getting a portion allocated to your bill directly from that site, then I think you're genuinely...
So you don't like multiple people taking credit for the same kilowatt hour?
Doesn't work for me. I don't know why the math doesn't. Like I said, I didn't end up becoming an engineer, but this I know, one person should get credit.
You know what? Speaking of that solar head of state, that might be a really good series for you to do, is like the solar head of state. They're putting solar on all these different presidential palaces, and you can be real James Bondy about that. Maybe
James, you might have inspired something. We'll see. There's many, many. Well, you gave me some recent story ideas too. And here's the other thing. I love doing this because, like I said, I started as a fiction writer. However, I am dedicated to promoting solar in pop culture any way possible. So if you have a solar story, write it. If you have a solar song, perform it. And if you've got a solar dance, do it. I think we just need to have it more into pop culture. I joked to a friend that solar isn't going to be mainstream until Taylor Swift breaks up with a solar installer. Maybe she'll even marry one.
That's a good one. That's going to be one of your probably true solar stories.
There was a while back, forget his last name, but he was an installer for REC at the time, the REC Solar that was the developer that eventually became, and then the EPC that became part of Duke. But anyway, he was on The Bachelor And that was a
cat. Oh, really?
That was a pop culture
moment. Oh, that's cool. All right.
And
I'll have to ask my mom about that.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. And he got some attention for Solar at the time. And then there was a improvisational one just recently on Amazon Prime, where there was this trial and of a sequestered jury, and everybody was fake. So this is technically fiction in the sense that everybody in the cast was fake except for that Solar salesperson who just was dealing with these crazy people during this trial and being sequestered for them all. So he didn't know that things were happening to him. That's the joke. And I forget what the said. I didn't think it was great. Other people told me about it and they said they were thinking that it was very funny. And it really didn't mention Solar that much at all. In other words, it wasn't educational. It wasn't about Solar in any shape or form. It just showed, like in the beginning of the series, that what his occupation was. And that was that.
I just thought of some other kind of background stuff that you could maybe riff on for some of your stories. Okay. There was Solar Battle of the Bands.
And yes, so that could be that. Like some
competition there. And you have the Next Tracker guy that's, did you work for him as a dancer?
Yeah.
And so he's a solar and a rock star at the same time, which is interesting. And then you could probably also use some real names if you ask people. Like people would be like, oh yeah, for sure, use my name. And then there was the solar competition that they had over there at Intersolar.
Yep.
I was even talking to them about incorporating. You ever heard of the story of the celebrated jumping frog of Calaveras County?
And, yeah, and I don't know it.
I kind of know about it because I graduated from high school in Calaveras County and our mascot was the bullfrogs. And they put, Mark Twain wrote the story, and they put buckshot, right, pretty much BBs, inside of a bullfrog so it couldn't jump so high. And there was also these solar racing teams that were, actually had them on my podcast. Did you see that over in Vegas at RE Plus? And they had these little race cars. I was telling them about the celebrated jumping frog in Calaveras County. So that would be just some other ideas too.
That is another movie that I actually can't find, but there is a movie called Race the Sun about the solar powered car races that happen Australia.
Yeah, they could be cheating each other and all this.
Yeah, I never got to see it. It was made, I think, even in the early 2000s, so even before my solar time.
Yeah, they have like money and bets on it. You also have those guys that are been flying the Solar Impulse and all that. I don't know.
I follow them forever, as well as Planet Solar, which Planet is the solar boat.
The boat, yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
There's a solar-powered yacht that went around the world just on solar and batteries. And it's a very cool-looking yacht. Mm-hmm. And now it's a research vessel and a party boat.
Yeah, like maybe the Solar Impulse could be like doing like U2 spy plane stuff or something.
That's already happening. Again, that's the other thing that frustrates me. It's solar has done so much for like all satellites are not powered by nuclear or gas or anything. It's powered by solar electricity. So anybody who says to me that solar isn't reliable, I say, look up.
Yeah,
and see the space station. And see if those astronauts think that solar is reliable. And they've been up there for so many years. And so solar is certainly reliable. Solar, yes, needs storage. And that's happening very quickly. And there's going to be a lot of other things that solar is going to be partnering with. I think it's Sonoma Clean Power, which is a CCA.
Yeah.
They are, again, going to go completely in their own little self-generation microgrid of having solar storage and geothermal all together in one place. That's amazing. And so solar is not the fix-all for everything, but it's certainly a big component of what our electricity generation is going to look like in the future. And eventually these costs, and probably everybody who's listening to this knows this being in the industry, but yeah, we're going to have a point where solar costs are going to come down so much that it's just going to be just so common and electricity is going to be cheap. And that's going to be, in some ways, I think, an issue, especially for the utility model, because the way that they're trying to grab power right now, I think once battery prices come down, we're going to have some defection. Like, people are going to want to defect from the grid because they don't need a utility right now. And as you probably know, all know, we've been having a lot of, here in California, some net metering issues and utilities not paying their fair share of us solving the climate crisis and preventing blackouts. So it'll be interesting to see when storage prices come down. I can't wait for a solid state battery to come around that's really cheap. And everybody goes like, why am I paying this ever increasing electricity bill? Now, what the utilities are going to do, and I hope utilities aren't listening right now, is increase their grid defection rates. And in other words, if you decouple from the grid, they're going to charge you a very expensive fee to do that.
I know, isn't it crazy? But they have the right to have a monopoly, right?
Well, again, that's something for the legislature to reconsider about things. They do right now, but laws can be changed if we get the right people in there. And that's another thing that, again, I want to do out of my podcast is inspire people to vote for solar-friendly legislature politicians and things like that. And again, if you don't vote and you're not registered, then please do, because we need everyone to be looking at these candidates and seeing if they're protecting the industry and protecting climate action, or if they're just
lining their pockets.
Lining their pockets, yeah, in many ways.
So I was thinking of something else, and it's like another idea. Like, I have all these ideas come out of my head all the time, and some of them might be creepy, but here's one that's, I'll just mention it anyway. We'll bury this towards like the back end of the podcast here. Okay. Is somebody's, like, there's all these movies where there's like guns and action movies and stuff, and they're torturing people and all that kind of stuff. And so if they wanted to get the answer out of somebody, they take a positive and a negative and they hook it up to each toe, and they do that at midnight. And then they say the sun's going to rise at this time.
Oh, I love that. That's very cool torture. Yes. Yeah. Well, I have to say solar people are creative, and there's creative ways to use solar as a weapon. This is another thing. And then if you've read John Perlin's book, 6,000 Years of Sun, I think is what it's called. Or it's either that or solar. Do you remember?
Let It Shine, the 6,000 Year Story of Solar Energy by John Perlin.
Yes. Go get that. It's also on Audible if you're an audio listener like I am.
Yeah, like me too.
And yeah, there are all these great stories about solar being used as a weapon, even in the ancient world, of trying to, again, focus light on with mirrors on people. Even Ben Franklin even talked about it, trying to burn ships and things like that by focusing light.
Yeah, was it even like, was it Pythagoras or something like that? Was going to sink some ships, and they found some evidence of that. I think they did it in Oakland, the guys, the Mythbusters.
Uh-huh.
I think they did a show on that or something that I heard about. I didn't watch it.
I don't remember that, but that's a good pop culture moment. I'll look it up. But yeah, again, there's that James Bond episode about that. One of the worst, not James Bond episode.
No, movie.
Yeah, but one of the worst was Sahara. Sahara is another one with Matthew McConaughey. And there's this, again, fight scene in a CS, in a concentrated solar power CSP plant.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nuts. So don't watch it.
And why is it bad? Like, because it gives solar a bad reputation as like instrument of death or something?
It's not only, you would never have a fight up in the tower where the liquid is heating, and it's not water. It's, I think it's oil in reality.
Molten salt.
Molten salt, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I hate it when I get molten salt all over me. Really fries my day.
But anyway, just really silly stuff. And plus, unfortunately, CSP, at least in its current forms, and there are maybe, I think, what are there, 5 or 6 of these plants around the world, they just haven't shown themselves to be as cost-effective and maintenance-free as solar PV is.
Yeah, I think what happened is somewhere around like 2008 or 9, the price of PV like went in half pretty much overnight.
Right.
And they took some of these concentrated solar thermal plants and they just converted them to PV. There's a real pretty one that's on the way to Vegas, though. It's on the California side of the border there. And they call it Ivanpah. If anybody's ever driving by there, pull over, just drive in until they tell you to leave. That's my recommendation. But I tell people sometimes that I'm going to do the Dr. Evil thing and I'm going to figure out how to overtake their computers. And all of those heliostats, those are mirrors. See, we're educating people.
Yes.
And I'm going to make them all shine on the moon, and I'm going to write my name on the moon. So once you see my name on the moon, you'll know what happened. And that's a great way to do marketing. You know,
yeah.
Write your name on the moon.
I love it. I love it. The sun was here. We should carve that into the moon.
And another thing, well, that reminds me of space-based solar power. You could probably have some pretty good episodes there. They're yes. taking microwaves and they're sending solar energy from space down to Earth. And a lot of scientists think that's really going to happen.
Yeah.
And they're researching
something
it now.
About it recently. Yeah. And there's definitely, it's technically possible from what I understand. Again, you're the engineer. Yeah. I'm not.
And you do get 24/7
right.
sunlight.
Yeah.
It's not like you have to deal with the atmosphere, the dang atmosphere. You need to get rid yeah. of it.
Yeah. Right now, the issue is transferring up so many thousands of pounds of equipment up there and yeah, making it all happen. I think they just completed an experiment from what I read of transferring electrons terrestrially. So from one plant to another place that was like 6 miles away.
Oh.
And it transferred via microwave to a storage facility. So it did work. That's great, but now the problem is space travel, as much as Elon has done for it, hasn't been able to do so much equipment that would be able to power a city. It would have to be huge amount of equipment mm-hmm. in space to do it. And
yeah,
so,
I guess the idea is to use something like Mylar to make a reflection onto super efficient PV. And so, I don't know, that'll be cool. Darn Earth's gravity. Maybe we'll just have to manufacture this stuff on the moon. It's yeah. all about that darn gravity, that darn atmosphere getting in our way.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, I'm grateful for the atmosphere. I hope it stays in place and we don't.
one of those people. Okay.
I just read, again, people thinking, okay, we're not going to meet our climate goals. So let's block the sun with a little bit of a tiny, not a tiny, a large sun shield that will cool down the planet a little bit. And that scares me in terms of that geoengineering, or I don't know what you want to call it, because as you mentioned, solar provides power in many indirect ways, including plants that feed us and feed the animals that we feed upon. If you mess that up and caused to cool down the planet too much by a hair, we could all starve. And then again, same way if we heat up too much, so causing deserts. So I think the solution is to double down on the terrestrial PV that we have right now and storage and all the wind. And Amory Lovins a while back had a model that people don't agree with, but I think it works just fine. Of just like, let's overbuild the shit out of all the wind and all the solar. It'll cost us a bunch. But with all the overproduction between wind and solar, that by itself is going to be a battery. It's just a matter of managing it. Again, for other 100% wind, water, solar solutions, Mark Z. Jacobson, the Stanford professor, also has models for every state and every country in the world to also produce wind, water, and solar 100%. It just takes money and it takes transmission and it takes some technology, but according to his work, we can do it. But I know that a lot of people feel that's controversial. So I myself am not a nuclear fan.
It's a little bit dangerous because people always use that excuse that they're doing it for clean energy when they're trying to make a bomb.
Yeah.
That's something that scares me.
Yeah.
You know, it's like whenever they're building a bomb, they're like, oh, we're doing clean energy.
Right. That's one thing. But I think the other thing about nuclear to me, again, in terms of the urgency of creating more clean power than and reducing carbon-based fuels, is that it's just not deploying. We've had one nuclear power station come online in Georgia that was over budget and I think 6 years late, and it was billions over budget. And people keep talking about the new age of nuclear, but okay, show me the clean kilowatt hours. And then I'll support it. A lot of people are still concerned about the waste, and I'm not educated enough to say that they'll be able to preserve it and safely. So that's another issue or an unknown. And there's a lot of NIMBY, But the bottom line is all that adds up to not producing these plants. And there's no supply chain for nuclear like there is for solar. That's another big issue. There's no workforce for nuclear like there is for solar. So all these are giant challenges for creating a big nuclear power station that they say would be bigger, better, and 24/7 than solar and storage. And yet, show me the kilowatt hours. That's my stump speech about that.
Yeah, and I was a little bit afraid when they were bombing Chernobyl, like during this war that we have going on over there. Like, oh, you don't have a bomb? You just bomb one of these.
Well,
I had well, it's so thick with concrete and steel or whatever, but I don't know. Right. Just it's spooky. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or put it in somebody else's backyard.
I did look, that is an old design and there are some issues, but I did have a back and forth with all these nuclear bros who know more than I do. And what they said was that particular design and plant, there's very, 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 very low risk of anything happening, even if a bomb hit it.
But something happened. That was the worst disaster there was, right?
Well, but that was a different plant and, again, a different design and something else. You're right.
We got to look out for those solar spills.
Yeah. Oh, sunscreen. My gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is
melanomas.
Dangerous. Yeah. We should shut down the sun just because of sun cancer and not worry about the other consequences.
Dang right.
But in any case, you and I are on the same page for one reason or another. Nuclear is not the solution. If we want nuclear, we've got a big giant ball of nuclear power in the sun that's 186 million miles away. So let's just keep using that one. And it's free as long as we have our technology here today.
Yeah. And then they have fusion. People are talking about fusion and they always have been. And that's a future technology that will always be a future technology, maybe. Perhaps. I'm not sure.
Perhaps. Well, again, I'm not going to say that innovation isn't going to eventually catch up for all these things. But for the immediate need, we have the solution. Let's just crank the shit out of all our solar module production, which we're doing all over the U.S. right now. And by the way, for those that are anti-Asian and all that, and China is in competition, they are, and they definitely have a lot of coal plants and all these other things, but they're also, again, if we can believe their figures, generating more solar power and batteries right now than the U.S. has ever produced.
Like in 1 year.
Yeah. In 1 year. Sorry. Yeah. Right. Yeah. You saw that stat too.
Yeah. That's a good thing to compete with. We don't want a Cold War. We want a solar manufacturing war.
Yeah.
That's my kind of war. And everybody wins.
And a solar installation war.
Yeah, like, solar installation war. That's a green war.
Green war. That's another idea that I'm going to be doing is in the near future. I like to make stories contemporary, but let's say 5 years from now, there is going to be this issue of everybody needing solar panels and the transportation wars that happen, and maybe even the same way that the military protects oil ships going back and forth from Saudi Arabia, we could be protecting them from other countries as well because they're in so much need. So that'll be a fun type of spin on the world. Yeah. And by the way, I don't know if you saw Bill McKibben's, I think it was in the Atlantic or whatever, but much of the pollution that we are emitting today comes from just importing, transferring oil back and forth to the Middle East. And like 30% of our global emissions would go away for just that transportation, which was mind-blowing. I mean, you think about it, there's a lot of bunker oil and all these other things that they burn doing that. And if we had no need for it, except for plastics, which I hope, again, we have other solutions for that in the future, then another industry is going to go away, the oil tanker industry. But at the same time, we'd cut out a lot of emissions if we just didn't need it. So another interesting.
We should import democracy over there, too. That'd be a good idea.
I wish it were so easy to bottle democracy and send it to people, and people just buy it off of Amazon really
quickly.
It'd
be like carbon-free democy.
Yeah, it'd be free of democracy. That would be a cool concept.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really one of those ideas that I think we are just in the middle of this transition again. And I liken it back to when we were transitioning from horses and buggies to cars. If you read about car experiences in those times, there weren't highways. There weren't even a mechanic, and you were lucky to find the spare parts if you were going around.
Your tire would blow out every other day or something like that.
Yeah, well, not only that, you had to wait in this town for a new Firestone to be delivered to you from somewhere else. There weren't those supply chains that you had. And so in many ways, this transformation that we're having in the electricity sector is just like that. And there's going to be some bumps. There's going to be some inconveniences, but eventually we're going to get through them all and everything's just going to be normal. Right now, it's still, I guess, in that early adopter stage because we're, I don't know, what was the last figure I saw? Maybe 5 or 6% of the grid. And if you include wind and geothermal and hydroelectric, we're, I think, in the 30s now. So we're catching up.
That's awesome. It wasn't that long ago where we were just hoping to get to 1% one day.
Yeah. And again, to credit the nuclear bros, that's part of that generation as well.
What's up, nuclear bros? I remember having like some debates with one of those guys before. He was pretty emotional, it seemed.
Yeah, they are definitely protecting their industries. But like I said, this is all a transition time for us. And I think it's going to happen. I do think part of this theme for this season is called the energy deep state. And I think there is a part of that in the world today, in the sense that fossil fuels are doing everything in their political and promotional PR power to say we don't have to transition that quickly. And there is a role for hydrocarbons and don't delete us. But, and as a result, again, through their think tanks, through PR, through their political donations, they are trying to slow down this transition that we should be speeding up. And so the more that we can show that solar and wind and all these other things are a normal part of life, I think the more that will transition that much faster because there'll be just public support for it. And that's part of having solar in pop culture.
Yep. And I even think too that with these big oil companies, it's like, who could actually get the whole world to change over to solar, wind, and storage fastest? It would be these companies. They're like as big as countries. They can build these huge refineries and these offshore drilling rigs and all that kind of stuff. Like, it'd be easy for them to just go like, oh, we're going to switch over to solar now. They would just totally take over.
Yeah, they could buy utilities and, again, just get in. There are so many ways that they can get into the clean energy business, but they are used to business as usual and they're not going quietly or quickly. So I do feel like, again, this is going to be part of the climate emergency story, but mandates will make it happen and then they'll do it. But it's really sad to me that they, all the people that run those companies, are people who are going to be affected by them dragging their feet and not just taking their profits, stop using those profits for further exploration, and doubling down on clean energy investments. They don't even have to invent all these things. They can just buy companies for extraordinary prices. And the other issue...
Hopefully they don't buy them and shut them down. There is a lot of the oil companies have been into solar one way or another. One thing that I noticed not too long ago, or just like on a search, was the big virtual power plant company, Next Kraftwerk. They're like over in Germany. And I think they were just further along than anyone else for virtual power plants, which I think is a big future thing, but Shell bought them up.
I think you're talking about Sonnen.
Maybe they bought both.
Maybe they bought both, but I believe they just sold Sonnen again.
Oh, because it wasn't. It says Shell buys Next Kraftwerk. So they bought that one too. Yeah, Shell completes acquisition of Next Kraftwerk. So that's interesting. They bought a couple of these, which I think is very forward thinking if they wanted to do the right thing, but hopefully they don't want to shut it down either.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think that they're under pressure from these shareholders that are just being short-sighted and just want money now and think that whatever climate things happen, they and their children will be rich enough to ride it out and it's not their problem. And that's a pretty sad thing, a sad state, that they would have that attitude. And if I'm wrong about that, and somebody from Shell is listening to that, then again, show me the clean kilowatt hours. Show me that you're transitioning and selling things like this and doubling down on more oil exploration, I think, is the wrong direction. And here's the other thing that we get accused of all the time, which I totally disagree. And that is, why are you flying? Why is Al Gore having his own jet and all these other things? And my answer to that is that, first of all, we are not saying that we should transition tomorrow or by next Tuesday at the latest. And we're saying that we have to start the transition in earnest very more quickly than we are doing right now. And it's a transition. And in terms of me flying or you flying and all these other things, those things are not going to make the grand difference in solving climate change. What's going to solve climate change is everybody, again, doubling down on our power sector and buying an electric car in our transportation sector, and so that there isn't a need to transfer all these oil tankers back and forth and waste carbon doing that. That's my answer. If we're going to continue to have our lifestyle, at the same time, the technology that we have right now is available. And if people aren't going to do it voluntarily and through the market, there does have to be a big brother aspect, I think, to, and I'm going to get in trouble for this, because big brother.
Big brother. Let's hear it for big brother.
But what there has to be mandates or at least penalties for not doing it more quickly. It's the world. It's our lives. It's our kids' lives.
Yeah. And I look at it too, where like if I fly in a plane or something like that, to make a solar module, it takes energy to make a solar module. And how long does it take for that solar module to make the energy that it took to make it? Maybe it's 1 year, maybe it's 2 years, maybe it's somewhere in between. It's not three.
They did a study on it, and it's now less than a year. I mean, depending on which technology, where it's produced, yada, yada,
and, yada. And then also, you can make the same solar module, refine the silicon and all that stuff with solar energy. And then how long is that solar module going to work? I don't know. I have a 20-year-old solar system that I have recycled because somebody upgraded and they were going to like, what do I do with this? I'll put it on my roof. It's a piece of crystal in sunlight. It's going to last for a very long time. And so that goes back to like flying the airplane or Al Gore's plane and all that kind of stuff. What's he flying his airplane for? He's flying it to show up at a climate reality conference to inspire the whole world to go green. And that's how it's going to work. And then eventually, we do have the technology to turn that those electrons into hydrogen, into hydrocarbons, and going back into Al Gore's airplane.
Yeah, I think this is, again, the political right and the anti-climate action proponents, unfortunately, are not considering or understanding the climate reality that their lives and their kids' lives are going to be affected. And immediately they are being affected with the stronger storms right now that we're having, with the droughts that we're having right now. And again, I don't want to get into a climate change debate. And the other thing that is about my podcast is just that. I'm not debating it. I barely mention climate change at all. What I want to do, again, is tell solar stories and solar transition stories. The reason, the impetus for that, if nothing else, is because nobody wants to breathe in pollution that we're doing and the health effects of that.
There's a hit of coal, man.
If you don't believe that's an effect, then I would urge you, well, not urge you, but have a thought experiment of being trapped in a garage with the engine on of a gasoline car or an electric car. Which would you do? And of course, you would do the electric car because there would
unless
be
you're depressed.
Emissions there. And you know that the fossil fuel, the gasoline car, is going to kill you. Well, that's slowly happening out in the atmosphere as well, one way or another. That's my thought experiment that I hope everybody would consider.
What I even want to do a little public service announcement here. My mom's got a gas car and I've drove it before and I've done it and my mom's done it where you park. And you don't know that it's still on. And you go into the store or go into the gym, whatever, you come out and the car's still on because they have this weird electronic ignition and the engine turns off and on automatically at certain times. That could kill somebody if that happened when the garage door was shut. So especially if you have an internal combustion engine car, double check to make sure that car's off. You don't want to wake up in the morning, walk into the garage, and then pass out and worse.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah,
even ice cars, bad.
Even a Prius, I guess, could do that, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's got an internal combustion engine in it. So it makes carbon monoxide. When I was a kid, I almost got killed by carbon monoxide. We were in Shasta, and we were riding this old jet boat, and there was a leak in the manifold. And I was down below, and me and my brother completely passed out. They couldn't wake us up. They had to take us to the hospital. So,
oh, my gosh. Yeah. Wow.
Otherwise, I would have been, like, really smart.
Wow. I mean, John, everything you do to teach others about solar, I think that I can't imagine you being even smarter than you already are. And your knowledge drops. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to like kill a few brain cells so you can get on everybody's level.
Yeah, right? Who knows? What, maybe you would be a nuclear engineer. Maybe you would have solved climate change with being a nuclear scientist if you were hadn't had that experience growing up.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah, I don't think nuclear bros are dumb. I just think they're stubborn.
Well, just like with the Shell and all them and all the oil companies and the nuclear engineers, we just need to get them transitioned. And so that's a lot of what I do is I just transition people. I have so many people in my classes that are just switching from another industry into solar. And you and I have switched from other industries into solar. Yep. And it's growing so fast, it has to be that way. We need people to transition. And if somebody has like nuclear engineer experience, this is going to be easy. We need them. And they're going to make more money this way.
Yeah. I've got a client who has had several people transfer directly from the oil and gas industry to solar, doing solar development and site surveys and things like that. Mm-hmm. They did the same thing also from the communications industry that also is always putting up towers and siting and have to do real estate transactions in order to site the towers and things like that.
Yeah. And they don't have to change their political affiliations either, even though we want them all to vote. I'm always surprised how many people that are in my classes or at these solar conferences that are like hardcore Republican climate change deniers and stuff like that. And they're out there doing more for solar than most people that are like believe that global climate change is real and all that kind of stuff. They're doing more than most people. And they're making a ton of money. They're in it for the money. So this is the first time in history where doing the right thing is the thing that makes you the most money. So join us, people.
Exactly. And I think there are a lot of motivations for people to go solar. I think money is definitely one and definitely part of my Solar Heist series, which again, you'll hopefully listen to. But for sure. The other thing is energy independence. And people, again, I can see... Yeah. A lot of conservative people wanting to produce their own power and feel great about that. And
as American.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's that independence factor. I think, there's the environmental factor of reducing pollution. Of course, the saving money aspect, which most people start solar that way with storage, I hope. So
make your own energy.
Yeah. And I think it's just people feeling like it's environmental. It's a sustainable thing to do, regardless, again, of climate change. So I don't care how you come to the industry, and I don't care what your political affiliation is, as long as on the one issue of more solar, that you're on board with that, because that helps many people in many ways. And if you're not, you're shooting yourself in the foot, unfortunately.
Yeah, I recall at one of the ACES conferences, that's American Solar Energy Society, ACES.org. Mm-hmm. They had somebody that was one of their speakers. I think it was in Denver. It might have been like 8 years ago or something like that. Somebody that was with the Green Tea Party. Have you ever heard of that? There was the Tea Party, which were all these patriots, super right-wing people, and they wanted to get energy independent. And I think it's really cool. I think like we totally need to have more bipartisanship and things like that, just like getting people from all different sides. I recommend to everybody is to go find somebody that thinks the opposite of you and make them your best friend. It's like, get the dialogue going. You don't have to hate each other for having different views. A lot of us have parents and things like that that we love and we're closest to that have completely different views, and we can get along with them. And we just need to get rid of some of the like polarity and hatred and stuff that you see going on
in
a lot of places.
And I would hope there's, again, this is also part of the series and part of the podcast. Unfortunately, there's been a lot of opposition now to utility solar in more rural areas where they're starting to be built. And it's a lot because people just don't understand the process of building a solar project and how that affects the land. There's a lot of myths there. So we've got to, again, continue this education process of telling people the truth that what goes into a solar project are steel poles. And if steel causes cancer, then you're driving around every day in a cancer coffin in your car. So there's nothing about that. There's no electromagnetic radiation that's coming off of the solar panels. There's
into it. Sunlight or electromagnetic radiation.
Yeah. And it's not drawing any more energy than would have hit the earth anyway. The sun is not going to stop shining just because there's not a solar installation there. No. Now, I understand the lifestyle things. Yes, it's going to look different than a farm being there. That's true. At the same time, you can cover that up with a lot with hedges and things like that that make things a little more pretty. The other thing that you and I know that people are doing these days is planting pollinator grass and beautiful flowers and things like that make it just gorgeous. Why not? That's attracting more bees that, again, we are being affected by climate change. And so we'd have those helping not only cultivate more bees and butterflies, but any nearby farms would benefit from those pollinators having a new habitat that would go over there and helping those farms grow. The other thing that we are seeing a lot of big trends in Europe right now is what they call agrovoltaics, or some people call it dual use. And they're growing crops right underneath the solar panels. And so in terms of solar taking up food or agriculture and land for food and ranches and things like that, they can coexist together. And so it's a win-win.
But one thing I don't like to see is to people make solar too political and partisan. So if you are super left and want to stop climate change and all that stuff, don't go out there and alienate other people. And I think that might be what's happening in some of these places where they're trying to stop the solar farms out in middle America somewhere. And it's because they're going like, oh, that's a Democrat thing. That's where these Democrats are trying to take over with their solar panels and all that. It's like, well, let's not make it a Democrat thing. Let's make it a people thing. And let's make it something that helps all of us and gives us energy and independence so we don't have to send our Navy into the Persian Gulf.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there are, again, the deep energy state is real. And there are organizations that go to anytime there's a new solar site is announced, these organizations, which are funded by oil and gas companies, will start a Facebook page in that community against that project and bring outsiders to that county to spread a lot of misinformation. I think we can't get away from energy being politics. That has always been the case from importing oil embargo and things like that, and all the things that happen in Congress right now. We have over 100 years of fossil fuel subsidies that the American taxpayer has been supporting these massively profitable companies. Again, over 100 years, you'd think that they were like grown up now. They don't need subsidies to survive. Just my thought. I thought after 100 years, they should be able to stand on their own. Energy is always going to be politics. That doesn't mean we have to be irrational and fighting each other about it. We can, again, debate things and hopefully we'll understand facts. Again, I'll just go back to my analogy that I wouldn't want to be in a car trapped in a garage anywhere if it was a fossil fuel car, just because it is not healthy. And for that reason alone, as long as I'm still going to be able to drive, why not switch to electric and something cleaner and quieter?
Yeah, and if you've been to like China or India, especially at certain times of the year, as soon as you get off of the plane, you could smell the coal. Yeah. You can look at the sun and you can see it and go, is that the moon? Because it's just this coal soot is in the air and it's killing a lot of people.
It is. It's
bad stuff.
Although, I don't, when's the last time you were in China or Asia?
I guess it was pre-COVID. 2019.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I understand that they built, I was there last in 2011. So really been a long time. And it was just as you described, it was May and the air looked brown and you could almost cut a knife through it and just eat the smog. But from what I just heard from another friend of mine and seeing, again, all this new generation that's happening there, the air is finally starting to clean up in Shanghai, where I was, because they are producing so much more solar, wind, and storage, and starting to, again, get ready, fossil fuel companies, strand assets and shut those down, because it's more expensive to run a coal plant and import those, especially as in terms of China, and import that coal from Australia, than it is to get free energy from the wind and the sun.
They are figuring out ways to still use those coal plants. So when you do have an inverter-based grid, you have some trouble because you don't have things like that inertia in the grid. We call it spinning reserves. So they could take that coal plant that spins, and then you can take that extra solar energy, you can store it into hot rocks and things like that. Like, you just take the solar energy, you convert it to heat, and then you can make steam again, and you can use those steam turbines and things that were used for coal plants.
Yeah.
So there is something that you can even do and make those assets a little bit less stranded.
Yeah, I'm really excited by the solar hot rock technology that has been coming out. There's a couple of new companies. I don't know if you'll interview people like that on your show, but it's really interesting that they're, again, using some type of, is it CSP? Is it electric?
Concentrated solar power or electric? Oh, I think they can do it with both. And I know that there's a company, because I'm on the awards jury for the Smarter E, the InterSolar people, and I get to see some different organizations that submit for awards. And there was a company that was doing that. And I can't think of the name of that company right now, but we could put it in the show notes. And they are using like volcanic rocks. I think maybe they're like Northern Europe somewhere. And they're heating them up with that extra solar power with the electricity, or it could be wind or anything. And then they're using it to make steam for steam turbines.
Yeah. It's amazing. So I think the bottom line for solar, the age of solar that we're in right now, is that we're still in this innovation stage, but it's going to take over one way or another, and everybody's going to have their lifestyles that they have right now. It's just not going to happen by next Tuesday. Just be patient, but support it. And the more you support it, the faster it's going to happen.
Yeah, maybe the Tuesday after. One way I've looked at this too is like, you can look at some hippie living off grid at the year 2000 or the 90s and stuff like that. And I've known a lot of those people.
Yeah,
and me too. They pulled it off with $1,000, 50 watt solar modules, something like that, $20 a watt, $30 a watt. And they're living happily ever after. And if they could have done it then, now that solar is so much over 10 times less expensive, we can do it now.
Yeah, especially with all the power that our new solar panels can create. And the other one last issue, which again, I'm trying to dramatize in the story, is the issue about solar recycling. So definitely solar panels are going to have to be taken apart and recycled or reused.
That's my favorite, is reused. Anybody that has working solar modules, the older they are, I think the neater they are. And I have a bunch of solar modules that are from the 90s.
Yeah.
They work just fine.
Yeah. And they're not going to go to a landfill if they're made in California and all the other states. I mean, if they're installed in California, I should say, and all the other states are also creating the same laws. It's not going to go to a landfill. And even if it did, it wouldn't do anything to you, because again, it's mostly made of glass, and silicon is basically sand.
It's kind of like throwing a sliding glass door into a dumpster.
Yeah. And by the way, the ones that are a little more troublesome, made by First Solar,
cadmium telluride, which is a very, very small part of the industry too. Some people like try to make it sound like everything is made out of cadmium or something.
Yeah. Right. But they recycle, they themselves, the company takes those back and then they recycle them into new panels.
And they're really easy to grind up and turn into a new module too with that technology.
And it's free. So it's included in their price.
And that cadmium, if they didn't make solar out of it, they already have it as a byproduct of different mining practices like copper. So they would have to put it into some kind of toxic landfill dump or something.
Right.
So it's like, you have to do something with it.
Yeah.
Make some clean energy.
Make some clean energy and keep it recycling. Reuse, recycle. What's the other one?
Recycle, reuse, and reduce.
Yeah. So that's another great thing about, we should start wrapping things up, but
going on record time here.
Yeah, efficiency is amazing. And so we'll be making the need for fewer solar panels in a way, because the efficiency is increasing so much and so quickly. The same power that you have on your roof with 20 modules right now, maybe 15 modules by next Tuesday, maybe.
But it doesn't mean you want to get rid of that perfectly working solar system. And so if somebody does want to do something like that, what I recommend that they do is they just put it on the north roof, because a north roof makes about 2/3 as much electricity as a south roof. So take that old solar system, stick it on the north, and then put the new one on the south. But you know what? Another thing, though, is they keep changing the net metering policies and things like that. Yeah. And so there's no way I'm going to get rid of my old system until it grandfathers. Because all of a sudden, if I added to this system, I'd have to be on net metering 3 in California. Yeah. And I would get less money, even if I doubled the size of the system.
I know.
It's politics.
Yeah, it's sad. What was the issue that you just brought up about not recycling, but right before that?
Like reusing it, putting it on the north side of the roof?
North side of the roof. That is a new one for me, because when I was educated in solar, it was never...
That was a true thing, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just like, if you look at it, if it makes 2/3 the amount of electricity, when you put it on the north side of the roof, if the price goes down in half, it would have been better to put it on the north side of the roof than a system that costs twice as much on the south side of the roof.
I just advised a friend about that, because the installer had, and it was a NAPSEP installer. So it's going like, are you trying to rip my friend off? And I checked with the Solar Tribe on the Solar Pioneers group that we're all part of. And they all said, yeah, it can make sense in certain areas and certain roofs and all these other things. And sure enough, that guy was right. And I apologized. And I told my friend, yes, this is solid. They're not trying to rip you off. Go for it.
Yeah. And say you have a tree over the south side, north side could be better. But if you have a place where electricity is less than 10 cents a kilowatt hour, it makes it really tough everywhere.
Yeah. All right. We've gone off. Are there any other random topics that you'd like to
talk about? There's just one thing that I wanted to talk about before we finished off here. And it was one of my favorite ever solar conference experiences. And you were involved with it. And it was a solar wedding at a tweet up. And so you're famous for having these things that they call tweet ups. And I know there's a different name for it now, because Twitter is X. So I don't know if you call it an X up, and it doesn't work with a solar wedding if it's called an X, because that's like a solar divorce, if you've ever had an X. So I just want to thank you for that. And so there is Marvin and Pam, and they went, it was an SPI, we called it before RE Plus. It was called SPI. I don't remember the exact year of that. And it was in Las Vegas, and they got married, and they had a code compliant wedding. I think with maybe like an NEC instead of a Bible, and instead of wedding rings, they used MC connectors. Yep. And when they clicked together, they were married. So that was pretty cool.
Yes. I officiated that wedding, and I wrote a probably true solar story based on that goes wildly fictional based on that. But you'll be hearing that in season 3 coming up after this Solar Heist series ends in 2 more episodes. Again, by the time this is published, that should be on the podcast, and you'll hear the fictionalized version. And a live reading, by the way, that I did at the last RE Plus in 2023 in Las Vegas. So it was kind of a reunion for redoing it or recreating that experience.
Right. Yeah, thanks so much for that experience. That was like, gave me hope for the universe right there. A code compliant, click in place wedding. So that was great. Thanks.
Pam and Marvin, because they definitely, that's what they wanted to do. And they just said, can we have it at the tweet up? And they wrote a lot of the wedding vows and all those things, and very well.
Yeah, Marvin's quite the code expert. I've learned a lot of things from him. So
yes,
Marvin Hammond, check him out on LinkedIn or something.
Yes, he is a professional engineer and damn proud of it.
Yeah, he knows a lot. Maybe too much.
Too much, Marvin.
Yeah. All right. So thanks so much, Tor Solar Fred Valenza. Thanks for joining us on Sean White's Solar and Energy Storage Podcast. Check out more about Tor Solar Fred Valenza, check out his website, and that is unthinksolar.com. And also we have his podcast, probablytruesolar.com. And you want to say one last thing?
thank you so much for the great discussion. This was really fun and I enjoyed it.
We went on for a record time. This kind of reminds me of one of those Lex Fridman podcasts where he talks for hours at a time. I think we hit a couple hours about here. So thanks so much, everybody. And to find out more about solar and storage and get yourself NABCEP certified to have some fun edutainment, besides listening to probably True Solar Stories podcast where you can get educated there, check out some of my classes. You can go to Solar, S-E-A-N, that's solarshawn.com.